Hi again, everybody. Welcome back. An outstanding program tonight. This will be an unprecedented program in many respects, and I urge you to sit back, keep mental pen and paper standing by. This is going to be wild. We're going to take a look at life after death from the subatomic level, and this I don't think has ever been done on American radio before, so stand by. Again, this is going to be an unprecedented program, I guarantee it. And we're not here to convert anybody. We're not here to change anybody's mind. As always, my job is just a custodian of information for you to have to consider, to ponder, to kick around, to discuss, to reject, whatever. It's your choice to listen or otherwise go elsewhere. And the same with my website. Some people occasionally write in and say, "You're too pro this, you're too pro that." Well, they missed the point. I think many of them are new to the website at Rents.com. I've got over 12,000 stories on there representing every conceivable viewpoint I can come up with. And they're all there for you. Don't draw any conclusions about where Jeff stands on this or that by any of the stories up there, because you'll be wrong most of the time. My guests tonight are Michael Roll and Ron Pearson. They are live in the UK in merry old England. And they are up and at them awfully early there. We have had the experimental proof of survival after death, of life after death, if you will, for over 100 years now. International teams of scientists carried out repeatable experiments under laboratory conditions proving, P-R-O-V-I-N-G, we all possess two bodies. One that packs it in, as my guests Michael and Ron say, and the other that carries on living beyond our five physical senses. It's like the old automobile analogy. Car runs, breaks down, driver gets out, walks on. You got two components there, according to my guests, a driver and a car. These experiments, by the way, lacked the mathematical theory to satisfy critics, and that's why the breakthrough didn't occur 100 years ago. Every experiment must have a mathematical theory. Thanks to Ron Pearson, we now have this missing mathematical theory. This is going to be interesting. Michael Roll, welcome to the program.
Hello, Jeff. Good to hear you.
Nice to hear you, sir, and thanks for getting up so very early over there.
It's a pleasure.
But it's late somewhere else, so take heart.
Yes.
And Ron Pearson, are you standing by?
I am indeed, yes.
Good, gentlemen. Nice to hear your voices. And this is going to, I'm looking forward to this very much. And I just got an email recently from a friend of yours, David Dufield, who said this would be a good topic. And I said, oh, yes, we've got to do this. And so we put this together very quickly. Although the research that Michael and Ron have been involved with and in is of long duration. Michael, tell us about your involvement with this whole concept.
Well, luckily, Jeff, I was born into it. My mother just showed me that the whole subject of survival after death was a branch of physics, right from the word go.
No kidding.
So I had no hang-ups. It was anything to do with believing anything or the supernatural. Everything is natural and normal, and that's how my mother brought me up.
Wow. Well, tell me more about Mom.
Well, yes, Mother had read this work of these great pioneers of radio and television, Sir William Crookes and Sir Oliver Lodge. And she did what your great American astronomer said, Carl Sagan. Mm-hmm. The trick is to read the right books. And dear old Mum showed me the right books to read. So,
well, bless that, yeah.
Yes, and of course they didn't break through, Crookes and Lodge and all these great scientists 100 years ago, because they lacked the mathematical theory. They had the experiment proving survival. But now, thanks to Ron Pearson, we've now got the missing mathematics.
Fascinating.
And the analogy, Jeff, of course, is the world being round. The Greek scientists actually proved the world was round by mathematics 2,300 years ago.
Right.
But the big breakthrough didn't come until Magellan actually sailed round the world in 1522. He did the experiment. Then you had the experiment matching up with the mathematics.
Right.
Then it was a total destruction of the flat earthers from that moment on.
Yeah.
And from now on, the materialists have had it. Now we've got the experiment and Ron Pearson's mathematics. It's the two together. And all we've got to do, as you said in your introduction, is just present it. And we haven't been able to do that in England because we've been blocked.
Well, you're not blocked here, and we are
no
going...
No, nor in Russia. Yeah. Ron Pearson's work has been peer-refereed and published by physicists in Russia, and now at your Temple University in Philadelphia, and it's all coming out now. I've just emailed all this to Ed Mitchell, the astronaut, who's very interested in this subject, and he's going to have a look at Pearson's paper that was published by the Temple University.
Very good. All right.
Center for Frontier Science.
Yes. All right. Well, we're going to blast the rest of the doorway open tonight on this program. Ronald Pearson, retired university lecturer specializing in thermodynamics and fluid mechanics. Ron used these skills to solve the problems of matching Einstein's theory of relativity with the exciting discoveries of subatomic physics, that being the study of the invisible part of the universe. Ron's papers, as you heard Michael say, have been peer-reviewed now in Russia and just getting into the USA now. This is going to be a major issue, I assure you. Ron, welcome again to the program.
Thank you very much.
Where were you university-oriented at?
Bath. I was at local university for a while, and I transferred to Bath.
Okay.
They didn't do anything about this until I retired.
Oh, really?
What happened was that I tried to look into some problems of cosmology and because I could see something wrong with them, and I thought I could find a solution. I had no idea of looking into the life after death business. I didn't even believe it at that time. But I found solutions to the problem that I was looking for, and this came out as a spin-off.
Some spin-off?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Is, it's totally against what the... physicists are saying, all scientists want to have this at any price because it doesn't fit in with their paradigm. And so, of course, they give the totally converse view. They just insist that mine and Bern are the same thing and won't allow any other kind of ideas to be presented.
All right. Well, we're again going to make sure that they hear you tonight. A lot of them are listening, I'm sure. The whole issue of life after death first entered your consciousness as you did this work. How many years ago, Ron?
I've been at this about 16 years now. I started in 1984.
All right. And
well, I should say, I got the hints in 1984. I didn't start doing anything about it seriously until about 1987 when I retired.
When did you meet Michael?
A couple of years afterward, I suppose, and I'll be about 1989, I imagine.
What brought you two together?
Some lady mentioned his name and said that what I was doing was supported by Michael. I should get in touch with him, so I did.
Well, it's no coincidences now. Remember that, Ron.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
All right, let's go back to Michael and have you give us a basic setup, Michael, about your work, how you got to the point where you realized there were two bodies, and what led you to these conclusions?
Yes, well, about 16, my mother didn't brainwash me or anything, but I was just brought up to accept survival as a natural force. And it suddenly dawned on me that none of my mates I was playing with knew anything about this, and I read this wonderful book by Arthur Finley called On the Edge of the Etheric when I was about 16, and I could see that everything was subatomic physics. But I also realized that if these great scientists, like our pioneers of radio and television, Sir William Crookes, Oliver Lodge, John Loki Bed, had failed to break through, there's nothing a 16-year-old could do. So I carried on in the commercial world for about 25 years. And then, in 1980, the missing mathematics started to come through. Orthodox scientists were talking about 90% of the universe being missing. And I thought, my God, that sounds like what we're waiting for, the missing, the etheric world or the spirit world, whatever you want to call for.
Sure, where is
it? That coincided with the collapse of my business. I was an auctioneer and estate agent. And then everything just took its path from there. And then dear old Ron came on the scene in 1988, and it all matched up.
The meeting of you two, the first time you sat down and talked, it sounds to me as if you almost had discovered a twin or something.
Yes, it was a bit like Stanley and Livingstone meeting because somebody had said to Ron, you ought to go and see Michael Roll because he's an expert on suppressions, which I am. I've become an expert over 20 years of trying to break through the establishment barriers. And when Ron told me that he'd been censored here and censored there, I was delighted. And it really bucked Ron up, because he was pretty depressed when he came to see me. I said, Ron, if your theories were wrong, they would have them out in the open and totally destroy you. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're blocking you is wonderful news to me. They must be terrified of you. And that's how it went from there on.
What a good way to look at things, you know.
Yes, and then we found out just how tough the establishment barriers are to break through.
Well, especially in the UK, more so, I believe, there in your country than even here in the States.
Yes, it is, because the church and the state are still established here.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. And the religionists have teamed up with their most deadly enemies, the materialists, because they both have a vested interest in blocking this knowledge.
Yes.
Not the followers of Jesus, I may say, because we're backing up what Jesus said, a lot of what he was reported to have said, but
right.
It's just the professional priests who are going to lose their monopoly on the life after death.
Ah, the money game.
The money game. It's money behind it all. But we're having wonderful support from ordinary people who religionists, because we're saying we do have a soul. The religionists are right. And Ron Pearson has put a mathematical equation to the soul that separates from the physical body.
Ron, how we have just a minute until our first break here, but briefly, how big is this, an E equals MC squared kind of an equation, or is it longer?
That comes into it. It isn't really, Matt's giving a slightly wrong impression. It isn't just an equation.
Mm-hmm.
It's to be more precise about it, I looked into the Big Bang theory, because it's full of logical errors.
Yes.
And this showed me that also Einstein's relativity theories need to be changed, because there were errors in that too. It's got inconsistencies in it. So I had to look at all these things, and I found that you had to produce an alternative to this. It was necessary to bring back the old ether. Now, the ether was a background medium which permeated the whole of space, and this was discredited before the turn of the century, when all experimenters like Michelson and Moore couldn't find any relative motion through the ether.
Mm-hmm.
So they discarded this ether.
Mm-hmm.
And then Einstein came along and produced a theory of relativity which is totally incompatible with the ether. And these two things meant that the ether was rejected. Now, once you do this, you block all hope of producing a theory which shows that life could exist. Because what happened is that the theory evolved from this point, and it showed that the ether was, in fact, a background medium which produced the universe, and has the potential to be intelligent and conscious. And so this then sorts out the whole problem. It shows that the universe was created deliberately by an intelligent act.
Oh, this is fascinating.
And it shows how it was
yes.
done. This background medium also creates waves spontaneously.
Stand by, Ron.
These are used to create the matter which we form our bodies from.
So, all right, stand by. I want to go back to this in just a minute. You've just opened 10 doors of fascinating discourse. We're going to follow many of those with my guests Michael Rohl and Ron Pearson tonight as we look at the subatomic nature of the living soul, life after death, life eternal. Be right back. I'm Jeff Renz. Okay, let's get right back to this as we just get through the first door here and see 10 more in front of us. This is going to be really a remarkable journey tonight with Michael Rohl and Ron Pearson. Okay, Ron, you've set up the playing board here a little bit, that there is an ether, that the ether was discarded by science, that Einstein's E equals MC squared was really something totally incompatible with the concept of an ether, and yet you have, without question, ascertained to your own edification and knowledge, both of you, that there is an ether. It, in fact, probably does comprise that 90% of the alleged missing universe. And what you said just before the break, Ron, about the ether having intelligence, I want you to go back into now for us, please.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Right. Oh, yes. Well, this is what happened. I found out that to try and solve these problems, I could revise Newton's laws and produce a theory which matched all the experiments which Einstein's theory matches.
Okay.
But it required an ether, and then a structure of the ether came out of the this work, which showed it's like a filamentous structure, very much like a brain. Very much like a brain structure, so that it has the potential to be intelligent. It's a very fine scale. It's a filamentous structure which represents the nerves of a brain cell, for example. But the scale is so fine that thousands of these fibers could lie across the nucleus of an atom. So very fine scale.
All right, hold on now. I want to stay with this for everybody. So the scale of the ether would be such that thousands of strands of something could lay across a single atom?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And this is what you're suggesting the ether is made up of, something like that, just to keep it simple so we can get a handle on it.
Yes.
Okay, and that to us appears to be a vacuum. It appears to be nothingness in the universe.
That's right. It appears absolutely nothing. And, of course, that's how the physicists regard it. They say it's just a void. But and they won't accept an ether because Einstein's theories won't match an ether. They're totally compatible with Einstein's theory.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, these early experiments showed that it wasn't, you couldn't measure the speed of the Earth through it, so they discarded it.
Uh-huh.
But in more recent years, experiments have shown that there is a speed. The speed of the Earth has been measured. And so this is no longer true. The trouble is that the physicists are so locked on to the idea there isn't an ether, they flatly refuse to accept it. And, of course, without this, we can't have a paranormal. But if you look through the annals of history, you'll see that the paranormal, which is defined, of course, as something outside physics, and even thunder and lightning was regarded as paranormal until Benjamin Franklin showed it was electricity.
Yes.
And as time has progressed, more and more things which were thought paranormal have come into the realm of physics.
That's extraordinary. Now, you've given us a complete validation of the entire paranormal venue that I spend a lot of time on this program researching, because it all emanates from another, it's not another dimension, it's just another factor of our living universe.
I don't like to call it another dimension.
Right.
It's the same dimension as we're in.
Right.
But you can't see it. We can't relate to it directly. But
it makes perfect sense. It stand by. We're going to take a break. Come right back with Ron Pearson and Michael Roll. There is another issue in our own dimension. It is called an ether, according to my guests tonight. And from that ether come any number of paranormal events. It's a logical staging ground and locale for them. Why not? Why isn't 90% of the universe actually formed of a mass of something that is so infinitesimally small, subatomically small, that it in fact could have its own intelligence? And emanating from that might be our 10% that we can observe. Be right back. Talking with Michael Roll and Ron Pearson live in England and their most extraordinary work, which, as you've been hearing, answers a lot of questions with a great deal of logic. We were deprived of our ether about 100 years ago by science, and Einstein's work, as great as it is, apparently makes no room for it. Michael Roll, the science that we know commonly discusses that 90% of the universe is not there. It's a vacuum. You would say it's even higher than 90%, wouldn't you?
Well, I was saying when Ron came to meet me that time in 1988 that 90% of the universe is missing, because that's what orthodox science was saying. But he says, no, I think it's much more than that, Mike. It's 99.9% that's missing. And also, you'll be pleased to hear that orthodox science has really realized their terrible mistake in doing away with the ether, and they have brought it back now under another name. They call it the quantum energy of the vacuum.
Ah, yes.
Otherwise, they'll have egg on their faces.
They're sneaking back to credibility.
Uh-huh. And Ron has put a makeup of this ether, you see. This is why they never broke through. Sir Oliver Lodge says this will have to wait for the future, the makeup of the ether. He said that in 1920s, and now the future's here, and Ron's the fellow who's got it.
Is this ether, Michael, in your opinion, and Ron's, a source of infinite energy as well as infinite understanding?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Ron will tell you that.
Sorry. Okay, Ron, go ahead and address that, if you will. What is the energy potential?
Well, first thing that I'd like to address is that this missing mass of the universe has nothing to do with the ether. The ether is something very much vaster than anything we measure as a missing mass. The missing mass, or any mass, is generated by the ether. And the ether itself doesn't have a weight in that respect.
The missing mass is generated by the ether itself, so we truly have a universal intelligence here, as it were.
Yes. There seems to be a universal intelligence pervading the entirety of space. It's quite astounding, really, that it could fill the whole space with a huge brain, but that's how it seems to be.
Hold on, Ron. So if that be the case, it would sound almost as if one were to drop a pebble in a pond and watch the ripples move all the way across it. It might be that even on this planet, what we do here could impact that universal consciousness severely, couldn't it?
Yes, that sounds very reasonable, yeah. Hmm.
Interesting. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'm not quite sure what to say next.
You're just talking about the fact that...
Well, one thing I should mention is that this idea of the universe being conscious...
Okay.
Having this consciousness. This is the speculative part of the theory, because I can't actually prove this by mathematics. Mm-hmm. In fact, nobody has, in fact, found what consciousness really is yet.
Sure.
But it does seem to have a network, very much like the neural network of the brain. So it seems to have the potential to be conscious. What is firm about the theory is that this structure produces waves, rather like brain waves, like the waves in our brains. We get brain waves, electrical brain waves, which can be measured. And this structure will produce waves of that nature. And it uses these waves to create matter. And now, this fits in very nicely with quantum theory, because no one said how quantum waves are generated. The whole of quantum theory is based on a thing called wave-particle duality, and no one has really established what this means. But now it seems to be coming out of this theory, because the only way that this intelligence could create matter was by focusing the waves it spontaneously generates. And so it was focused the waves to make density increases in itself, and these are the particles we observe. So it all fits in very nicely.
So these waves are being focused to create density, which we would call atoms, particles?
Yes. Well, parts of atoms.
Mm-hmm.
And then these are organized by the intelligence itself to create atoms, and then, of course, our bodies and the matter of the universe. So it does give credence to the idea that the universe was deliberately created. It didn't just happen.
And what you're saying, I think, is that the universe was deliberately created by itself.
Yes, in fact, what would happen is that this structure of space would develop first and evolve in intelligence, rather like a Darwinian evolution, and then it would decide to create the matter of the universe out of itself. So, in a way, it supports the main tenets of certain religions, which say that the universe was created deliberately, but this puts on a scientific basis. And of course, it the mind turns out then on this basis to be part of this structure of the ether. So mm-hmm. when your body dies, you are downloading whatever is in your brain to this background intelligence.
Is it a collective intelligence, or is that background intelligence somehow?
I would say both.
Apportioned individually.
It seems as though there will be whole background intelligence which extends everywhere.
Yes.
But our individual minds.
Yes.
Are sectioned off bits of this intelligence.
Rather like a file on a hard drive.
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah.
All right. In other words, there are individuations amongst that mass universal cosmic intelligence, which we would call, just for the lack of a better term, what's a fine term, our soul, as it were, soul, our soul file, our soul being. That is the part that counts. That is the spark, the aggregate sum total of our experiential energy and data that we gather. It's kept in there. Okay. All right. Amazing. All right, Michael. the idea of an ether, we need to foster this concept of the ether isn't coming back. The ether never left.
It was left, no.
We were the ones who sort of got out of step with it. I think that's what you're after. Let me ask you, what is your work, yours and Ron Pearson's, not in conflict with? What is it not in conflict with?
What is it
in conflict with?
Well, you must remember that orthodox science now across every discipline, including psychology and philosophy, teach when you're dead, you're dead. We don't have a soul. So that's why we're in conflict with them. We're in conflict with the whole of orthodox teaching across the whole of the world, in the universities.
I wanted to make that point. I mean, you are literally up against, this is not a David against Goliath, this is a grain of sand against Goliath.
That's right, but we're winning because of the dear old Internet. Something wonderful happened a few months ago. I was always going to get on the Internet, but I wasn't on, and my phone rang, and my dead mother actually phoned me, through a medium, of course. And when my mother was dying, Jeff, we set up special codes for her to contact me only using those codes.
Oh, this is like a Houdini experiment.
That's right, yes.
Okay.
Well, Houdini did that with his wife, as you know.
Right, but no contact yet.
Pardon?
No contact yet, him.
He did.
Oh, he did?
If you saw the film, the Hollywood film, they did it correctly, that he did make contact with his wife with the codes. And she signed a sworn statement to that effect that she definitely had made contact.
Very good. We need to straighten that out in the record.
And then she was a Roman Catholic, and the priest frightened her to death, so she retracted her sworn statement.
Oh.
They said, you ain't going to get to heaven if you're going to go carry on like that.
So that's
what happened there. But the dear old Hollywood film, which they did on Houdini, they got it right in the Hollywood film.
All right, stand by. That's fascinating. I didn't know that. Hold on, Michael. We'll come right back with Michael Roll and Ron Pearson. Remarkable and logical and pragmatic and sensible. Are they right? Time will tell. Be right back in a minute. You've been with us this first hour. You'll be able to hear this program, of course, in the archives, and you can buy a tape of the program as well anytime at all. Just call 888-836-4670. This is a groundbreaking discussion for sure in American radio. Michael Roll and Ron Pearson have been suppressed and repressed in England, but they're breaking through, and the first break was in Russia and now over here in the States as well. We have been talking about the ether, about that 90 or 99.5% of the universe, which is said to be missing, how our entire physics has been set up erroneously, according to my guests, and how there is, in fact, always has been, in fact, an ether, which is the substance, the fabric, the universal consciousness of it all. And from that ether are expressed waves, energy, intelligent waves, which are brought into focus by intelligence, and out of that focus come subatomic particles, and the building process heads on up from there. Each one of us has our own Akashic record, as some people like to say, of experience and data, which certainly stays together, although it is part, in its own uniqueness, an aggregate part of the entire universal consciousness, which is of the ether. The ether itself, remember, created the universe, according to my guest tonight. This is very interesting. All right, Michael, we've been talking to you about organized religion, and boy, are they, if you're even 10% right, are they in trouble?
Well, no, well, Ron Pearson is hoping that they're going to come with us.
So that's the point.
We do have a soul, but they're going to have to change their old doctrines and dogmas.
They're not in trouble in terms of going out of business. They're in trouble in terms of they're going to have to start playing a different tune.
That's all, yes. I've got a letter from the Bishop of Salisbury, a very senior bishop in England, saying to me there's no hope for the churches unless they get back to what Jesus taught. And even people like myself who have no religion, I do follow the marvelous ethics of Jesus, and of course Thomas Paine, who said, "My country is the world, and my religion is to do good." So it's more or less following Jesus, you see. So I can't see why they shouldn't do, as Ron Pearson says, adjust their ancient doctrines and dogmas to match up with the ancient teachings of Jesus, because I follow Pythagoras, Socrates, and Plato, who all said we survived death. There's a huge universe out there you can't see and sense.
Sure, there are.
I'd like to enlarge just quickly on my mother phoning me. People were thinking,
I'm
crazy.
That's right.
I did the same as Houdini and his wife did.
Okay.
When my mother was dying, we set up codes. So if anybody phoned me and says, "I've got your mum with me," if they don't give me those codes, then it's not my mother. And anyway, this medium gave me these wonderful codes mother and I had set up. And I said, "Well, what's this urgent message mum's got for me?" She said, "For goodness sake, get on the internet." and that's typical mum, you know, she gets very cross about things.
Isn't that amazing? And how long ago was this?
That made me get on the internet, and here I am speaking to you across the world, because I'm not allowed to do this in England.
When I
am banned from speaking like this in England on the national radio.
Now, Americans would be hard-pressed to believe that, but friends, he is not exaggerating. We have talked over the years on this program with many people in the UK who talk about the very strict repression that some people are under there. Are they in UFOs, they call it a D notice being put on the media, but in this case, you guys got the D notice.
I had to get the law changed to actually broadcast on local radio in England. It was against the Broadcasting Act in England to talk about life after death in a serious scientific manner. You were only allowed to speak about it in a light-hearted manner or as a wish merely to entertain. So I took the radio authority to the European Court. And just the fact of taking them there made them change those crazy laws.
Well, you are an expert on suppression, then.
I did break through eventually on one national radio station. And within a week of me getting on, they sacked the presenter that invited me on, because the radio station went under a sea of letters.
Fascinating. Tell me how long you've been on the internet now, Michael.
Well, a very short while, only a few months, and now I've got my own website, and it's so easy that you just give out your little website and everybody can click onto it. It's all there, very clearly set out.
It is.
There's two super articles from Ron Pearson there in layman's language.
And it's let me give the address, by the way, go to my website, rents.com, and click on it. You'll find it right there in guests. 3w.cf, that's Charlie Frank, CFPF. Paul Frank, Charlie, cfpf.org.uk. Real easy, cfpf.org.uk. All right, tell me more about your mom. I'm sorry, I don't want that to go out. That's a very good story.
Of course, I was going to get on it anyway, but that really pushed me into action. And the very next day, completely out of the blue, an internet whiz kid phoned me from Germany, an Englishman living in Germany, and he did the whole thing for me.
It got you up and running.
Paul Beard, and he came to see me only a couple of days ago, and Ron came to meet him here in my house, because Ron only lives half an hour away from me.
Oh, wow.
And he's going to do the same with Ron now. He'll get his website up and running, so everything. Because Ron is for the whiz kid, you see. As soon as this breaks, Ron will go straight into the universities. He's already lectured to Professor Stephen Hawking's students at Cambridge University. Well, Ron will tell you all about that.
Very good.
Great success.
Let me go back to Ron, and we'll talk about that right now. Ron, how did you get the invitation, Ron, to talk to Hawking's students?
It came from a student at the university. I'd just given a lecture in Russia. Because it wasn't possible to get anything published in this country and in the West on this subject, this was particularly to do with an alternative to relativity, which was quantum, which was fully quantum compatible and also compatible with the existence of an ether. Nothing to do with life after death. But the students must have got a hang of this lecture, which I gave in Russia.
Yes.
And invited me to repeat the lecture.
How did the Russians? How did the Russians accept it?
Oh, very good. I found that contrary to the dismissal I was receiving here, they were very interested and willing to listen.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more open-minded. It's amazing.
Well, I see now the West will be faced with an ether gap unless we get with it, huh, Ron?
Oh, I think so. I think that the Russians are much more into this area. They've done a lot of work on the paranormal and. Which more than
oh,
we
yes.
have.
Yes, yes. Now tell me about the Hawking students' lecture. The word must have gotten back to Stephen Hawking himself.
Oh, yes, and the result of that was that I've never been invited to give a lecture to another university. They put the clamp down on it completely. It didn't suit them at all.
The other university stopped you from talking even after that.
I've never managed to give another lecture at a university after that one.
Mm-hmm.
Up to then, I had lectured at several universities. The first one was at Leeds, due to a student there who,
yes.
Samuel Nichols, who's an MSc in astronomy. He invited me on, and he'd been a great supporter.
It's so amazing, Ron. Just. From a layperson's perspective, we, all of us, are outside of Orthodox science, conditioned to think of science as our savior, our Sherlock Holmes, our guardian of the unknown in terms of presenting anything and everything to us that may be remotely relevant, and yet the opposite is true in so many ways.
May I come in there?
Go ahead, Michael.
Jeff, something very important. We must quote the science correspondent of the Daily Telegraph.
Oh,
the Daily Telegraph is one of our top
nice.
Upmarket papers in England here.
Yes.
And this science correspondent says, nothing infuriates scientists more than talk of paranormal phenomena, because if confirmed, the whole basis of science would be threatened.
True.
You see, you must keep all that in mind whenever you're wondering why this isn't getting out. Every scientific textbook in the world will have to be rewritten. They'll have to do the same as the Russians. Ron went over there, he hasn't told you this, to the Sir Isaac Newton conference. It was held in Russia. I mean, Sir Isaac Newton's our great English scientist,
mm-hmm.
but the
mm-hmm.
Russians held the Sir Isaac Newton conference over there because they're extending Newtonian physics to fit in with quantum mechanics. Because Newton didn't know about subatomic physics, you see. So Ron will tell you how he's extended Newtonian physics to fit in with these wonderful discoveries in subatomic physics.
Ah, just extraordinary. Let's go back to Ron. Ron, we have just a couple of minutes before we have to take a break. But tell us, if you can, in succinctly as you can, what subatomic means to you. Where are we? All understand electrons and the little things that float around and
yes.
orbit around, you know, the center of the atom. Go ahead.
When I talk about the subatomic level of reality, I'm talking about the ether. It's something which from which all else springs.
Okay. It's not particles like electrons, protons. It's way beneath that, and yet it's way around it.
I've come to the conclusion is that it's made out of what I call primary particles, which are the only real particles in existence, and these are made of opposite kinds of energy. They breed by collision, and that's what generates the whole thing. It just grows from a seed, so to speak. And grows continuously, but this is because of a breeding action between the opposite energies. They breed like opposite sexes.
Opposite
and
energies.
And in so doing, you get a pure creation effect, and then you get annihilation, and it's the annihilation which produces the filaments on which this intelligent structure depends. So the whole thing is produced by extending Newtonian reasoning.
I understand. Stand by. We have to pause. Hour number one is in the can, as they say. We'll come back. Two more hours to go with Michael Roll and the brilliant Ron Pearson live from England. This is a history-making broadcast, I dare say. We'll be right back.